Hey friends, it's Ian from TV's The Recovering Gleek, Ugly Podcast. When Lena and I first decided to make this podcast, we quickly realized we had literally zero idea of how to make that happen. Thankfully, a friend of ours recommended the podcasting platform Anchor. Anchor is free. It has all of the tools you need to record and edit your podcast from your phone or computer. You can even add songs from Spotify into it. And the absolute most amazing thing about Anchor is that they will distribute your podcast for you. So anywhere that you listen to Recovering Gleek, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever weird third-party app you're using, it is there because Anchor put it there. And the icing on the cake is that you can make money from your podcast through Anchor with no minimum listenership. All you have to do is record an ad, which is why I am recording an ad right now, because I want money very badly. It is everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Welcome to Recovering Gleek, a podcast for all of your complicated feelings about the TV show Glee.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back.
You cannot start like that.
Now we can't because you drew attention to it. Hi, we're professional podcasters. We just spent 15 minutes switching between different video chatting softwares to see which one had better Wi-Fi connection. And none of them had good ones, so we're settling.
Yeah, we're settling on Facebook Messenger. I don't think I've ever even tried to do video calling on Facebook Messenger. I know, other than you. I know that. No. I meant before. God,
why are you so mean to me? Well, hello, everyone. We're very excited to have you back.
Hey.
Because if you're listening to this episode, it means you didn't hate the first one.
And honestly, wow, big hugs from us to you.
Or you did, but you thought you'd give us the benefit of the doubt. And
honestly,
I hope we live up to that confidence.
I would not be surprised. I've listened to it, the first episode, approximately 10 times. And I've just, overanalyzed everything I have ever said in my entire life to a degree that is not appropriate. So I would not be surprised if that's what was happening.
Yeah, I listened to it. I was telling Lena this and I was like, wow, how many times can one person say like in a sentence?
We're young.
It made me feel very stupid. It made me feel very bad about myself.
Another thing Ian and I also say is, what did I say earlier? It was...
You said we always say straight up.
We always say straight up. We're like, straight up.
And then I always go, when you're talking and I want to interrupt you because I think I'm more important, I go, hear me out. And then I'll say what I'm saying. So catchphrases are beginning organically, everyone.
Well,
it's not because we're stupid. It's because we believe in branding.
We have
and
a personal
brand.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
We're going to sell merch. It's going to be t-shirts that say straight up. Hats that say like. And then bracelets that say
And then hoodies that say friend of the podcast, Jayma Mays.
That was an actual organic thing.
Yeah.
That wasn't us being stupid.
No,
Welcome
actually
to the
trying
podcast,
to be funny.
Everyone.
Hey, my name is Lena Knatzer and I'm a Gleek.
And my name is Ian Allred and I am as well a Gleek.
Let's talk about Glee, Ian.
Let's
How did you
dive
like this episode?
In.
Give me
honestly,
like give me
this
your
episode
honest thoughts.
Made me angry.
Really?
Because two episodes in a row were so good that
they're
it
bangers.
Made me mourn for what this show could have been.
Yeah.
But as an episode, very strong, very good. The pilot all over again.
Honestly. And like, it was so hard for me to watch the second episode and not go on to the third episode. I'm trying really hard to like only watch the episode when I'm ready to talk about it. But like, I was just like watching it. The show is so palatable right now, and it's so easy to like binge and watch, and it's amazing. And this episode's a banger.
Who knew that this show was good, you guys?
Oh my God.
I thought all of those ratings and all of those Golden Globes its first season were all a prank.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought someone was pranking me. I thought someone was pranking 13-year-old me.
It was a Truman Show scenario.
Yeah, honestly, are you really afraid that you're in the Truman Show sometimes?
No, okay, that when I, like, now I think about it, like, whatever. When I was a kid, it was a genuine, like psychosis. Is that the right word? Probably not. Everyone's going to think I'm so stupid when they listen to this. I promise I'm like relatively intelligent.
You have a college degree.
I have a college degree in musical theater, so I'm very clearly smart. But when I was
You had to take one math class?
That movie changed my life in the worst way.
Worst way. I completely agree.
Every time, like, if someone that like I didn't think should know my name, knew my name, if someone like turned to me and we like hadn't spoken and they were like, "Hey, Ian," I was like, that extra just messed up their line. It's like the scene when he gets on the bus and the little girl whispers to her mom, "Look, it's him." And the mom's like, "Shh." I was like, that extra just outed the fact that I'm the main character. Also, it's funny because
you're like, I'm on to you.
There's all those TikToks now that it's like, convince yourself that you're the main character, and it's supposed to be like building yourself up because everyone assumes they're the side character. Literally, I'm the opposite. I'm such an egomaniac. My whole life,
I was like,
I'm definitely the main character.
That's and what makes us such good friends.
Like, that's why we were drawn to each other.
Yeah, and we're both main characters.
Everyone else's storylines revolve around me. I am the centerpiece. I am the glue that holds the story together.
I think about that. Oh my God, so constantly. I am very convinced, and before I even saw the Truman Show, I was convinced that like everyone around me like knew who I was, and my parents were making my childhood into something that it wasn't, and like paying people to be my friend. Does that make sense?
That is way darker than mine. Oh my God. Mine was like, I clearly am so talented and incredible that everyone wants to pay attention to me and I'm the star. And yours was like, no one really likes me. They hang out with me because they're paid to. Those are wildly different scenarios.
Let me relate to you, Ian.
I mean, it makes you sound like the better person. So.
Yeah, well, you know, I am.
Anyways,
that's not true.
That was the Truman Show hour of the podcast.
It truly almost was an hour.
Now on to the Glee section of the podcast. Back to the episode at hand.
Episode two,
Showmance.
Showmance. Showmance premiered on September 9th, 2009, 999. Can you believe? This episode was directed by Ryan Murphy, and it was written by Brad, Ian, and Ryan, our big dynamic trio. And the three co-creators only wrote like 7 episodes together, and it's the pilot, this one, and a bunch of later ones, like much like season 4 later. Like, they stopped writing episodes together for a really long time, so this is really special. And honestly, maybe that's what makes it so good,
because it's very the same thing.
It has like a very clear vision of what it is.
I was reading an interview with one of them, who knows which one. And I also, this is going to be the vaguest quote of all time. They were talking about what each of them brought to the table. And they were like, so-and-so, I don't remember which one they said. They like brought the heart to the table. And then so-and-so brought the humor to the table. And then the third person probably brought another thing that I don't remember. But like, these first two episodes are so well balanced. And like, the show so clearly knows what it wants to be. And then when they stopped working so closely together, it kind of just like went whichever way whoever was writing it that week.
Definitely. Like, oh, this episode has more heart. This episode is funnier. This episode has, a lot of current events in it. Anyway, this episode's amazing. It's called Showmance, and it's a play on words with the words showmance and romance, because we introduce the pairing of Finn and Rachel. We got a little taste of it last time, but this is the episode where they kind of, their showmance ignites.
Lena, did you ever have a showmance?
Oh my God, literally, hear me out. I think this show emotionally stunted me in the way where I thought that showmances were normal. So no, I never had any showmances, but I was always convinced that like showmances were normal and like would happen more frequently than they ever did. So even to this day, I have to like undo a lot of the lessons that I learned from Glee and like shows like this that dramatize people working together in artistic scenarios, where I'm like, oh, this guy that I'm cast opposite as, we're definitely gonna like get together, when like that has never happened to me in my entire life.
Yeah, also not a healthy expectation to have.
Definitely not. And honestly, like, as people, you and I, who you know, are trying to make working creatively with other people our job. Like that can't happen. This can't happen.
No, yeah. In high school, it's a fun idea to flirt with. Mm-hmm. When you are like, we are both professional actors, many times one of you already has a significant other. That's Do not tea, normalize sister. Showmances, everyone.
Honestly, like Finn
Stay
in this
committed
episode.
To your significant others. Yeah, yeah. Well, I have comments on that will be saved for later.
Yeah,
I never had a true showmance. I was always, this is the story of my whole life. The idea of a relationship sounds exciting to me until I get in the position to be in one. And then I'm like, no, this is everything I don't like.
Yeah.
I would always... like the same thing, like be cast in a show and I'd be like, maybe something will happen. And then yeah. like when we worked together and like started developing a chemistry and all this stuff, then I'd be like, oh wait, but I had to take time out of my day that I would rather just watch TV by myself and like entertain this other person. And wow. I never wanted to. The closest I got is when I was in Beauty and the Beast, I was the Beast and I took the girl who was Belle to my junior prom. And then she won prom queen because she was a senior. And then the prom king kept hitting on her for the rest of the night and trying to dance with her. And I was like, dude, I paid for her ticket. You got your one dance because you both won.
God, Jesse St. James.
Leave us alone.
That's funny.
Yeah, that was a good time.
I think you and I are the opposite person in so many ways. And I think that's what makes our friendship so fun.
You're the yin to my yang.
Aw, sweet. I'm going to send you a best friendship bracelet. Anyway, you hate having people depend on you. I am codependent, like to an extreme degree. So like every time I'm in a relationship, I'm like the opposite of you. So, and I rush into relationships too fast. And you know, I also have not been in a lot of showmances because this is a sad bit about me. I don't get cast as those parts very frequently, which what a shame. Because no, I am
for real.
Yeah.
You, most of you don't know because all you've heard of Lena is her talk for an hour. it is a crying shame that she does not get more leads in musicals because she is freaking talented.
Yeah. And like we can unpack that in a later episode when it's more appropriate to unpack. But I don't get cast opposite to a lot of people. But when I have had unhealthy expectations.
On to Gliacts.
Let's get into some Glacks, coined by Ian last episode. I really liked it. Okay, so the songs in the episode. I learned that when seeking to attain the rights to songs early in the season, Murphy was often requested to send out advanced scripts, like from the record labels, but he refused because he didn't want to set a precedent for record labels having creative involvement in the show. Interesting, right? And I read this in an article that also said that singer Rihanna offered her single Take a Bow for reduced licensing rates. Isn't that so nice
Good
of her?
Good for you, Rihanna.
Rihanna?
I was going to say Riri, and then I thought, Ian?
That girl Riri, you could say that.
You don't know enough about Rihanna to call her Riri.
I've actually heard... every time I hear Rihanna talk, she refers to herself as Rihanna.
Oh, well,
but
that
every
just,
other person on planet
that just
on the planet
shows
calls
that I
her
don't
Rihanna.
Know enough about her to call her Riri.
You could. I think her Twitter or her Instagram handle is Bad Girl Riri. It was, maybe. I don't know. And then another Glack is, after this episode, Showmance, the Parents Television Council named Glee the worst show of the week, deeming it inappropriate for teenagers due to its sexually charged an adult nature. Isn't that interesting?
Talk about life imitating art, because that's the whole plot of the second half of the episode.
Exactly.
Also, I will say, this is the episode, it was the first episode I ever watched.
It was! Oh my god!
And it is the episode that turned my mom off to the show for that same reason.
This episode, like, especially compared to the pilot, is way more inappropriate when it comes to like the sexuality of it all. Inappropriate obviously is in air quotes, which brings me into my next point. Nancy Gibbs of Time Magazine wrote that she heard Glee described as anti-Christian by a local youth minister of hers. And then she commented that while almost all of the Ten Commandments are violated during this season, she found it insulting to teenagers to suggest that they would attempt to emulate what they saw on screen. She described Glee as being about a journey, not just to college and a career, but to identity and conviction. The price of popularity, the compromises we must make between what we want and what we need. And honestly, I totally get that. I really appreciate this episode because I think far too often we like treat teenagers, especially like if we don't talk about it, it's not going to happen. If like it doesn't matter. And I like that this episode is so frank about a lot of stuff. What's up?
I was going to say many things. One, as a Christian, it always annoys me when someone is like, this one Christian character is bad. And so the thing is anti-Christian.
Yeah.
And you're like, it's made very clear, not in this episode, to be fair, but later in the show, it's made very clear that Mercedes is a devout Christian.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
She's like a very positive role model. It's just annoying to me that they're like, I'm going to latch onto this one person and say the whole thing is evil. Anyways, yeah. I hate Spring Awakening. That's no surprise to people that know me. I don't like that show. But the thing I do like about that show is the message of pretending that something isn't going to happen doesn't mean it's not. That like trying to shield your kids from stuff in the world by telling them it's not real does not protect them from it at all. It just makes them ill prepared. What you should do is teach them about it and prepare them so that when it happens, they can be safe about it. But the reason I don't like Spring Awakening is because Into the Woods has that exact same message with 100% less angst. Spring Awakening
I love
is too angsty for me to deal with. It's the people who made it are very talented. It's not my thing. I'll take my Into the Woods any day.
Next, Glack. This is the first episode where we meet Heather Morris.
Brittany.
She plays Brittany.
Do you know?
Love Brittany.
Where Heather Morris is from?
Is she from Scottsdale?
She's from Scottsdale, Arizona.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's
also
awesome.
Also, the guy who played Dave Kurowski, I'm pretty sure, is from Scottsdale, too. So everyone in my town was on the show except for me, Ryan Murphy.
Wow, honestly so rude. Back to my Glack. So Heather Morris, who plays Brittany, she doesn't have any lines in this episode, but she is established as a part of the trio with Quinn and Santana called the Unholy Trinity by Tumblr users.
And later on by the Unholy Trinity themselves.
I know. Honestly, when that happened, I was so pleased. I was like, wow, they listen to their fans. Their fans, meaning me. I'm the biggest fan. Anyway, back to my Glack. Heather Morris.
The new game is how many times can Ian interrupt Lena before she finishes one fact.
Heather Morris was originally hired as a choreographer for the show. Did you know that?
Yes, because she was with
Beyonce. Isn't that so interesting? Yeah, she was with Beyonce. We'll talk about that in a later episode. They liked her so much and they thought she looked so good with the cast and they thought that she added a fun dynamic to the crew that they were like, we're going to make a character for her. And that was all in a day. Literally, they met her. She choreographed something for them. And they were like, let's put her in the show. And then she was in the show. That's why she's in this episode and not in the pilot. That's the end of my Glack.
The end of your Glacks.
The end of my Glacks.
You know, that makes it, if you just say it's singular, it makes it sound like you have a disease. You're like, oh, sorry, it's my Glack acting up again. Anyways.
I'm sorry, guys. I have a Glack.
I'm sorry. You can't blame me for that. It was my Glack, not me. All right, so now we're going to talk a little bit about episode 2 of season 1, Showmance. Full disclosure, this is take 2.
This is the second time we're recording this episode.
So
the first time we recorded it took like 2 hours.
Yeah, first of all, we talked for 2.5 hours, and then we listened to it back, and it was the conversation was so hard to follow, we were all over the map, so... In full transparency, we are doing it over. We are now giving our podcast a little more structure.
A bit of a facelift, if you will.
So that those who don't know us very well or aren't in the same room as us right now can understand what we're talking about and don't have to do detective work.
The first take that we also did was like terribly negative as well. Even though we're like, yeah, this episode's a banger. We love it. We were like, this episode sucks. So like, let's actually talk about the good stuff, yeah?
Seriously? So our new structure, and for now and possibly forever, is one of us will detail a brief synopsis of the episode so we're all on the same page as to what happened. And then we will discuss the good, the bad, and the ugly. We will talk about moments that we really loved, stuff that really stuck out to us in a positive way. And then the bad, we'll talk about stuff that we thought was kind of dumb or didn't land very well for us or qualms we have with the writers. And then the ugly, it's 2020. This show was written 11 years ago. A lot of stuff hasn't aged very well. So, you know, we understand it was written 11 years ago, but we still would like to kind of call out moments that probably should not be in the episodes. Anyways, here's what you missed on Glee. Sue informs Will that in order to qualify for regionals, the Glee Club needs to have at least 12 members, so Will decides to have the club perform La Freak at an assembly in order to recruit new members. The Glee Club is horrified and begs Will to choose a different song, but their pleas fall on deaf ears. In the meantime, Terry and Will begin searching for a new house, since Terry's sister Kendra insists their apartment isn't nice enough to start a family. While house hunting, Will begins to worry about money and starts looking for a part-time job. He eventually takes a job as a nighttime janitor at the high school for half salary. In the meantime, Rachel's crush on Finn grows, and following the advice of Emma, she begins to search for common interests with him, eventually joining the celibacy club, which Finn joined in hopes of getting into Quinn Fabray's pants. At the celibacy club, we learn via voiceover that Finn struggles with premature ejaculation, and uses the memory of the time he hit a mailman with his car while learning to drive to bring him back from the edge. Rachel is not pleased with the ludicrous methods of the celibacy club, and announces that the more barriers teenagers are given, the more likely they are to act out, and they should instead be teaching being prepared and safe, thus impressing one Finn Hudson. In the meantime, Emma has been crushing on Will, and she runs into him as a nighttime school janitor. They have a brief exposure therapy-themed flirtation before Emma panics and leaves. The next day, Ken Tanaka asks out Emma, telling her she needs to stop pining after a married man with a baby on the way, which amen she does, and Emma accepts. Back at Glee Club, Rachel decides to go behind Mr. Shoe's back and give the student body what they want, sex. Instead of La Freak, the Glee Club performs Push It by Salt and Pepper, much to the delight of the students and the horror of the faculty. Figgins tells Will that from now on, the Glee Club can only perform from a list of pre-approved songs, all of which are about Jesus or balloons, and tells Sue her dry cleaning budget will be cut to purchase better costumes for the club. Rachel and Finn have a brief rehearsal/picnic date, which culminates in a kiss where Finn's mailman memory does not work, causing him to tell Rachel to please not tell anybody about this. Terry gets an ultrasound and discovers that she is not pregnant, but is in fact experiencing a hysterical pregnancy. She cannot bring herself to tell Will, and instead says they are having a boy. Finally, Quinn, along with Brittany and Santana, joins the Glee Club and hopes to keep Rachel and Finn apart, while Sue realizes she can use the Cheerios as her spies to bring the club down from the inside. Finn goes back to Quinn, and we end the episode with a distraught Rachel performing Take a Bow by Bad Girl Riri while crying in the mirror. And that's what you missed on Glee! Lena, what'd you think about this episode?
Hear me out. I love this episode. I love so much about it.
All right. So what's your good? What was good about this episode?
I loved Sue in this episode.
Yes.
I loved Sue in this episode. I think it's the first time we really got to see like who Sue was as a character and like what Jane Lynch could do. And I think it really showed probably the audience at the time, like what kind of thing we're dealing with here. And I think she just does such a great job. She has some incredible lines, like the line where she, after the assembly, and she says to Will that she is so appalled by that performance that she thinks that all of the children should be put into foster care. Just the most absurd lines come from her. And I just don't think Glee would be Glee without Jane Lynch. And I love her. She is an immediate good for me.
Yeah, Sue is in the pilot and Jane Lynch does a good job, but she's very much an afterthought. This episode is prime Sue. It is when we set up her dynamic with Will. And like you said, Sue freaking like home run after home run. Her lines are so funny. I wrote down quite a few. One of my favorites is when she tells Will about the iron tablets that help with menstruation and throws them to him. And he says, "I don't menstruate." And she goes, "Yeah, neither do I." No further explanation. We just keep going with the scene.
Neither do I.
God, also, she says, after Finn and Rachel use her copier, she says that they should be hobbled, which is when you tie a donkey's legs together so it can't run away. And then Will tells her to hold on, and she says, "I resent being told to hold on to anything, William."
I just so appreciate a villain who is just as nasty as she is. She is absolutely, I think, one of the best television villains of all time, because she's just like a cheerleading coach. Like, she has like almost no power over those kids, like on paper, but it shows like just how villainous she is and how like much of a hold she has on this school. And just, she is Like, where did she come up with this stuff? She's so funny. I love her.
And I love that we're just given peeks into, like, her power and what her life is like. We're never given a full look.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that the cheerleading uniforms get dry cleaned in Europe.
In Europe. Why do they get dry cleaned in Europe?
And that's just breezed past.
Yeah, like, or when she's, like, exercising in her office, she's like, yep, just blew out my hammies. Like, what is her dealio? I love her.
And that she can't clean up the smoothie because she gave Figgins a doctor's note that her lupus won't let her bend over a bucket of suds. Jane Lynch is a treasure. This episode.
Friend of the podcast, Jane Lynch.
Jane Lynch is a big fan of the podcast. She's so funny. Hooray for Sue. I love her so much.
Ian, what is your next good?
Oh, man. I have many goods. This episode was the first appearance of, as Lena mentioned in our Glax, of Brittany. Therefore, it was the first appearance of the Unholy Trinity in its fullness. It was also the first appearance of Jacob. It was the second appearance of Santana, but her first spoken line. And honestly, Naya Rivera is given very little to work with in this episode, and she does absolutely everything
she can with it. Absolutely everything. Her in the dance number, her in the number, her just like in like side scenes. She does so much. I love her. She's doing the absolute most.
She just embodies such attitude in everything she does, and she literally, all she says is get a room, and that's it the entire episode. And yet I 100% remember her.
Yeah.
I, like, remember every scene she was in, because she is constantly trying to demand the camera's attention.
Yeah.
I just think a lot of characters came into their own in this episode.
Yeah.
We already talked about Sue. We mentioned Santana. I would not say that Santana came into her own in this episode.
No.
More that Naya Rivera demanded that the writers make her come into her own later.
Yeah, she's like, give it to me now.
But we start to see a lot more of Kurt's personality. I love Kurt in this episode. I love Kurt, period. But first episode, as we mentioned, he was a replacement character, so he didn't have much personality. But I love just some prime Kurt moments in the scene where they do Gold Digger, which we will talk about a lot later.
Yeah, it's not going to be in this section.
It is not in the good, that's for sure. But the scene when they do Gold Digger, there's a conversation between Kurt and Mercedes at the beginning that is so funny. And I would not be surprised if it's ad-libbed, because it sounds ad-libbed, where Kurt says to Mercedes, you need to call me before you dress yourself in the morning. You look like a Technicolor zebra, and I look like I'm part of it. I look like I planned it. And that made me laugh so hard. Just that entire scene is Chris Colfer being so in character. When Mercedes does the Gold Digger solo at the very beginning, I forgot how the song goes.
You really tried, though. She give me money.
I couldn't remember if it was she give or she take, and so I just bailed. When she sings that, he watches her, but his facial expression is not like complete awe. It's also not complete horror. It's like something in between. Where he's watching her, where he is both surprised with how good she sounds, but also seems to be like somehow embarrassed for her that she's going this hard on this song. It is like complete admiration, but with a little bit of judgment in it. And it's so funny. It is so funny.
I just have to point out that especially with the Glee Club students, I think all of their characterization is already so strong with having almost nothing to work with. Like Kurt, Mercedes, Tina, Artie have almost had zero lines in these first two episodes. And I already know who these people are. Like, I already know who they are. Like, as someone who has watched the rest of the show, like, it stays true. Like, I wonder what, like, kind of rehearsal they did, because they are just on point, you know? They know who they are. They know what they're doing. I love them. And they have, like, no lines. And I know who these people are. Goodness.
Yeah, and that's also kind of a credit to the writers. I know that we crap on the writers, or at least we're going to crap on the writers.
Yeah, we're going
to. It is a credit to them that they made each of them such strong high school archetypes, which is inherent in satire. Like satire, you take things that are common and you exaggerate them. And so that's why they all are exaggerated stereotypes. But that does help with the fact that like most of them, those who are not named Finn and Rachel get like two or three lines this episode. And yet, as you said, I 100% know who they are. Their personality shines so strong. It's also a huge credit to the actors. that they
definitely
are like so in tune with how these characters should be right off the bat.
Yeah. Kudos to them. They are really doing the absolute
Who
most.
Who knew the Glee cast was talented?
I thought, I don't know. Not
shocking.
Me. Just kidding. Definitely.
All right, Lena, you're up. What are you, what's good?
I'm up. Here, my next good is Terry.
I have Terry too.
Oh,
Jesslyn Gilsig's so funny, everyone.
Wow, let's combine both of our goods. Let's just talk about Terry for a second. I think here, I don't know why I've just, we've talked about this a little. You and me, we both love a villain, and I'm gonna keep loving the villains. I do. Terry in this episode, and all the, like, the villains in the just the, these early episodes of Glee, they are so unaware of how absurd they are. And I think that is such a powerful tool with villains, especially, mm-hmm. is to make them look like fools. So I really appreciate how both Terry and Sue are written. Just some things that happen with Terry. You know, Terry is the manager at Sweets, at Sheets
Assistant
and Things.
Assistant manager.
And she is just so convinced that she is the hardest working woman on the planet. She's so convinced that she is. And you know what? Maybe she is. I don't know. But like her whole deal with the sun nook and the grand foyer,
which she refers to as her very own Sophie's Choice. And she is 100% sincere. It is as hard for her as Sophie's Choice was for Sophie.
Exactly. And that is hilarious. Like, no regular person in their right mind is like, ah, yes, a grand foyer and a sun nook. This is going to be a hard decision. It's like, no one thinks, like, equates it to Sophie's Choice, but she does.
We're
and
being
you know what?
Spoiler free for Sophie's Choice, everyone. If you want to know what Sophie's Choice was, look it up yourself.
Yeah, shoot me a DM on Instagram. I'll tell you what Sophie's Choice
was. We'll do a bonus
was.
Episode about what Sophie's Choice was.
Maybe we'll release the first episode we filmed with a spoiler in it at a later date. Maybe for you have to be
yeah,
like a
if you
want to
hear
Patreon.
Our train wreck version of this episode where we talk for 2.5 hours about nothing and we fully spoil Sophie's Choice, let us know.
We it was not me.
It was Lena.
Sophie's
I said
Choice. It was
I
you.
Said Lena.
Stop that.
Some people haven't seen the movie, and you said it came out 40 years ago. Who cares?
You're a big fat liar. I'm gonna kill you. Anyway, Terry. I just love Terry in this episode. Will just loves her so much. And even Will is like blind to her derangedness in these like first two episodes. And it's just, wow. I love it. I love it so much. I love that plot point. I think her having a hysterical pregnancy and then not even having the tools to know how to tell him the truth is so much. And it makes me excited to see where the rest of the show goes. Obviously, I don't condone any of the things that Terry is doing. Obviously, she is a bad person. But, like, man, I love her as a character.
Well, as you mentioned, that's the beauty of having, like, a comical villain, is that mm-hmm. they are so obviously wrong that, like, no one in their right mind who's watching is going to side with them. So, therefore,
yeah, exactly.
their villainy becomes something you can laugh at because they're the butt of the joke. Because they are so yeah. obviously in the wrong that it's funny. And that's why, as you mentioned, Sue and Terry are such wonderful villains, because they are so cartoonishly evil that, like, who in their right mind would think that? I think Jesslyn Gilsig is so talented at portraying the, like, frantic energy of Terry. And I noticed,
yes,
I noticed on the second watch through this episode that when she tells Will that the baby's a boy, you can see on her face that she's surprised it's coming out of her mouth.
Yeah, it just like falls yeah. out of her. She doesn't even realize she's saying it until after she says it.
And then he says, it's a boy. And then you see the moment where she decides to double down. And suddenly, like, she has this facial expression of like, I guess this is what we're going with. And then she smiles and goes, yeah, it's a boy. She's so good in this episode. She also, when the doctor tells her that there's no baby in there and she asks, did it fall out?
Yeah. Wow. I love her. I love Terry. I'm really excited to see where it goes with her. I just think, what a strong villain. What a strong character. And also, mm-hmm. I love me a lady villain. I love that we have two really strong lady villains.
We got three, because I'll take your Terry and I will raise you a Kendra.
Oh, and I'll take your Kendra and raise you a Quinn for Bray.
Four, five, four. I don't know how math works. Four
All
female
of them
villains,
are blonde.
One episode. That's true. Ryan wow. Murphy, what do you have against blonde women? Let us know.
Is it because of me?
It's because of Lena Knatzer. But I think Kendra is so funny. I love that she's somehow worse than Terry. And as you mentioned in round one of this podcast, that actor ad-libbed most of her lines.
Yeah.
She just was
like riffing with them. Yeah.
And I love, first of all, I don't know if we're supposed to think Will and Terry's house looks too small for a family. I think that no, we aren't, because she has a craft room. So yeah, their house is
clearly, it's a 2-bedroom apartment.
Their house is like clearly nice enough for family. It's a very nice apartment. But I love that Kendra, first of all, thinks that the house is a pigsty. And second of all, tells Terry that if she gives up her craft room, that loss of rest, like that respite, is the only thing that will keep her from going all Susan Smith on her little angel. Which, Susan Smith is a
that
woman.
That line is everything.
She is a woman. This is not funny, but the line is funny. Susan Smith is a woman who in 1994 drove her car into a lake, drowning her two kids. An absolutely horrifying thing that happened. But the fact that Kendra is like, if Susan Smith had a craft room, that wouldn't have happened. This is like such awful people. I think it's so funny.
I love that. She like has it all solved with the craft room. God, I love her. Ugh. Yeah. The lady villains in this show, I wish there was a bit more diversity, obviously. But like, honestly, I'm a blonde female villain. Look at me.
Lena is very villainous. She is a cartoon villain in her own right.
Definitely. All right, Ian.
Okay. On the opposite side of the spectrum of heroes who I love and I love their portrayals, Cory Monteith, incredible.
Yeah.
He's
one of mine too.
And it's shocking to me because when I watched the show and it was first coming out, I didn't like Finn and I didn't dislike Finn, but he never stood out to me. I was just like, whatever. But rewatching it, Cory Monteith is so perfectly cast.
He is.
He is like, he portrays the awkwardness and unsurety of being a teenager so well. I love how bad he is at dancing. Maybe my favorite, like, 1 or 2 second moment in the entire episode is during Push It, when he takes over with the rap. And Rachel has been doing her verse of the rap, like, so confident and in your face. And then Finn takes over, and you can tell he is so unsure of himself. He keeps checking in with the audience. He keeps, like, kind of smiling, but then not smiling all the way because he's too self-conscious and doesn't know if he should be smiling. It is so funny. And also, like, his rhythm with rapping is just bad enough that, like, you're convinced that he is all... That's another thing, is Cory Monteith is clearly a very talented performer, but he does a really good job of making it believable that he's a high school student who doesn't perform. Like, when he is singing with Rachel in the auditorium on their little date, he sings a G and he hits the G, but the way he sings it is like someone who has never taken voice lessons, who has a lot of potential but has not honed anything in. He just does such a good job of making Finn someone that is relatable and that you feel for.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree. Like, in my first watch of the show, you know, Finn's not a character that I relate to in most ways. I mean, there are things that I definitely relate to, and I think, you know, he's the everyman. So I wasn't drawn to him at first, but as an adult watching it, like, what an amazing character. And Cory Monteith just, like, absolutely does an amazing job doing it. I love him. I just think he's so sweet. The scene with Rachel where he, like, really wants to kiss her and he really likes Rachel and he's confused by how much he likes Rachel because he is in a social class above her and is so... like, I should be with Quinn, obviously, but I'm having these feelings for Rachel, who is, you know, a quote-unquote nerd. And, like, just the grappling that he does, Cory Monteith, I see all of it, like, on his... I see all of it. And he just... he does the absolute most. I absolutely adore him. I adore Finn as a character. Wow. He's amazing. He's amazing.
Also, in that same scene, the dialogue is so realistic to teenagers flirting with each other. We're literally, like, you can tell they want to make small talk, but they don't know what to talk about.
They don't know how,
and
literally.
Finn, straight up, she pours him a Cosmo, and he goes, I like these cups. They're like airplane cups.
Yeah. And then they immediately start making out. Like, I feel like that is the most teenager thing on the planet. Like, you start to, like, talk about nothing, and then it's just like, oh, just let's skip this. Our hormones are going
let's
crazy.
Let's get straight for it.
All right. My next good is Rachel Berry.
Oh, yes.
Rachel Berry. So many good things, so many bad things. I just feel for Rachel Berry. Maybe I'll get a lot of hate for loving Rachel Berry the way I do, but I do. So my favorite thing about Rachel this episode, other than everything, one, her rolly, her suitcase full of sheet music. I am this woman. I am this woman. Like, her carrying around her sheet music in a suitcase. Wow. Amazing. Second thing, in the celibacy club scene, when she calls out the celibacy club for being like, you know what, guys, I don't think this is smart. Like, I don't think we're doing anything here other than making everything a little bit worse. And she spits out some straight facts about some sex education. And you know what? As a child seeing that, as a like a young person seeing that, that changed who I am. I love Rachel Berry, and
I wrote in my notes during that scene, Rachel is a sex positive icon.
Yeah, she totally is. She totally is. And I love that, like, she wants to relate to Finn so bad that she is willing to join this Christian club. The celibacy club. This girl, this woman is Jewish. Like, she's, like, by all means would not feel comfortable in this space, and she doesn't. But, like, she likes Finn enough that this is the thing that she wants to do, and she's that determined. Wow. God damn it. I love Rachel Berry.
I also, while we're on the topic of the celibacy club, love that during the Finn voiceover, he says, I'm still not sure of the celibacy club thing. I only joined to get into Quinn Fabre's pants. That, to convince Quinn to sleep with him, he went to an anti-sex club.
Yeah.
No, but Lea Michele does a great job. She's so funny. That's, I love Rachel, and I think it's not talked about enough how funny she is.
Yeah.
Lea Michele does such a great job of portraying the, like, obsessive and neurotic side of Rachel, especially one moment that it like really shines is after Emma tells Rachel to pursue common interests with the guy that she likes, and Rachel's like, yes, you're right, thank you, and she smiles, and then she gets this look in her eye when you like see the wheels turning, and she looks like she's gonna go insane for just a second, and then it goes back. And it is so subtle, it's so good. But then on the other end of the spectrum, she also is so good at making you feel bad for her. Like, after...
Definitely.
After Finn kisses her, and he only lasts 6 seconds. I counted
it.
That guy is having problems. Anyways, he lasts 6 seconds.
Do you think that's like something that, like, a doctor could help him with? Like, hey, man, listen, doc, I ejaculate fast.
Seriously, because they weren't even, like... freaking like
they weren't doing anything,
they weren't feeling each other up or anything.
Their hips do not touch even a little bit. Like, his hips are like off of her, and she's like, they're laying down, but like, it's just their shoulders crossing each other. Nothing sexual happens.
He's got to hit a few more mailmen, because that did not
my god,
the one's not working for him. Anyways, when he tells Rachel, please don't tell anyone about this, and leaves, and she thinks that he's talking about her, and she sits there alone, sweetheart. And then starts crying. That scene is so well performed. It made me feel so bad for her. High school is terrible. Being a teenager is awful. All of your feelings are so big. No thank you to that.
Any of you who are teenagers right now, I promise you your feelings start feeling less big, and it will get better.
Let's talk about some good numbers, which for me was all of the musical numbers besides one. And I besides think the one is very obvious.
Yeah, so, we'll get to it.
Honestly, I'm going to even go through the half numbers. I think Freak Out is so funny because I love in these first episodes of Glee how they allow the kids to just be huge geeks.
Yeah.
Like, you can tell why, like, you don't agree with it, but you can tell why these kids are bullied. They are so geeky. They are so awkward. Freak out. Rachel is like so into it and way too into it. The other kids.
She's like staring at Finn from across the room, like trying to like overperform for him.
And the other kids like aren't into it enough. It is hysterical. And watching it, before I remember the plot point that it was supposed to be embarrassing, I was like, yikes, this performance is really embarrassing.
Yeah.
And then you can tell by the dialogue it was supposed to be. And I was like, oh, well, then they nailed it.
Yeah, definitely. I love watching Corey dance in that number as well. Like, it is prime. Like, we never lose Finn being a bad dancer. I just think Corey Monteith is not a strong dancer. But, like, it is everything to me. Watching him do the John Travolta hands, it is everything to me. I love it.
And then that geekiness, I just love how geeky they are in this episode. Because yeah. Push It could easily have been an uncomfortable number to watch. I mentioned earlier during the Glacks that this is the episode that turned my parents off to Glee because they were like, and so in my mind, I had built up that Push It was like very scandalous and very uncomfortable. And I expected to be all like, I shouldn't be watching this. And then it played and I was shocked by how tame it was.
Yeah, how completely unsexy the whole number is.
I had built it up to be something very different, but I think it is so perfect that it's not sexy. That yeah. It is these kids who are so awkward that even though they're doing like such, not even subtle, like such obvious in-your-face raunchy moves, it is not in the least bit sexy. It is like somehow endearing. It is like they have been, it's what Rachel says in Celibacy Club, that they have been so pent up for so long that they're finally letting loose. And you can see on their faces, besides Finn's, that they're like, this feels great and we're nailing this. But as an audience, you're like,
it's almost violent.
But as an audience, you're like, oh, sweeties, like, no.
Yeah, I love almost everything about that number. I think
that's
it is
my favorite
so,
scene in the episode.
Yeah, it's so well choreographed. It's so just beautifully awkward. It's so funny. I found myself laughing so hard. And it's just so believable that, like, this is a group of teenagers trying to be sexy, but actually just being weird. You know, like, I heart them. I love those little muffins. They're doing a great job.
And I love how incredibly, I already said this, but unsubtle the moves are. That it is like they stick their faces in each other's crotches. They like put their hips against each other and rock back and forth. It is so raunchy that it reaches the point where it is like no longer raunchy to me because it's so comical.
Yeah, even like Finn, who is literally lifting Rachel up by like her shins almost, and she is like straight up humping him, but in the weirdest way, and in a way that like wouldn't work anatomically, you know, like it is so violent, and she's like, it's just like jumping on him.
And also the fact that like they're not even checking in with each other, like humping him. But she's looking at the audience like, aren't I nailing this? And he's looking at the audience like, do they like this? Is this embarrassing? Is it not embarrassing?
Yeah, they're like, and especially this episode is literally called Showmance because of Finn and Rachel's showmance. And like that move, I don't think furthered their relationship even a little bit because they're both so focused on like what other people are thinking. And you know what? I have been there. I have been there. Like, oh my God. I love that. I love that Rachel Berry is so preoccupied, not with this boy that she is like actively trying to get, that with the audience thinking that she's hot, that she's not even like recognizing that she is full on like, oh, mounting that tree. God.
And also the costumes are clearly like they wanted to look hot, but they're still self-conscious teenagers.
Yes.
So like freaking, I love that Kurt has a fanny pack on.
My favorite is Kurt like just like gyrating his hips and the fanny pack bouncing,
like bouncing up and down. Oh
it's
my goodness.
Everything to me. Then, oh my God, Artie, when he's like, this number's for all the sexy people, and he unzips
and
his sweater
like he's
to
got
reveal
a
his button up.
That whole scene. From the beginning, from Principal Figgins given like a textbook awkward principal introducing an assembly.
I love Principal Figgins.
To no one clapping for the Glee Club except for Emma going, yay, Glee! Glee kids, hooray! To the whole number and Will, Emma, Sue, and Figgins' reactions to it. It is like start
to
finish
television.
A perfect scene.
It's
perfect. Sure pissed off that parent organization you talked about.
Definitely.
But I loved it.
Isn't that, you know, typical? That's what the whole episode's about.
That's what the balance is in my mind at least, this is my opinion, I don't speak for the whole world, but teenagers being sexy is, or even though like they are adult actors, teenagers being sexy is uncomfortable to watch because they are teenagers. Teenagers trying to be sexy, but they're too awkward to accomplish it, is hilarious.
Yeah.
And so if this number had genuinely been sexy, I probably would have felt the same way. I would have been
definitely.
That was too much. I did not feel comfortable with that.
But it's not.
But the fact that like they're so into it, but it's not actually sexy, it's incredible.
It's amazing.
Also, we're gonna crap on Matthew Morrison later, but he's so funny in this scene.
principal scene?
No, in Push It. His like slow realization. Because both Sue and him are horrified. Sue is more just like in abject horror the whole time. But Will's slow burn realization about what is happening and what it means for his career is so funny.
It's everything. It's everything. That scene is perfect.
And also Emma thinking that it's like cute and endearing is also hysterical. Yeah.
In an interview I saw with the cast, Emma, friend of the podcast, Jayma Mays, says something like, I don't think Emma really understood what the humping was all about. I don't think she thought it was naughty, which like is everything to me. And I love that about Emma's character. I just think it is so funny to have a guidance counselor who is so blissfully unaware of everything about being a teenager. I love her.
She like cares about the kids so much that she's like, look how excited they are about this. Like, good for them.
And you know what? By all means, she should be. They are dancing and singing with so much passion. She's right. They're doing a great job.
It was better than Freak Out. So good for them.
Certainly. Certainly.
Other musical numbers in the show that I liked.
Take a bow.
Yes. But
first. Or should we talk about. Say a little prayer.
Say a little prayer.
Say a little prayer is everything.
Unholy Trinity. First off, I love that all three of them are in it. That is the first time we see Santana, Brittany, and Quinn as a unit.
Mm-hmm.
Could we not have had Naya Rivera and Heather Morris sing the backup vocals? Because I don't know who they got.
Yeah.
But those women are not teenagers.
No. And
I also don't think they're white. They sound like middle-aged gospel singers, and then it's like little Heather Morris, like, this is me singing back up to this song.
Yeah. I think as a rule, this show mostly doesn't have the main cast do the backup vocals, and I don't know why. I think it would have, like, upped the production value a little more, but it probably would take longer.
I just think in this episode, because Heather Morris... I know that we are focusing on this episode, but Heather Morris doesn't get a solo for a very long time. And so I think it is accurate, as you mentioned before, she came on the show as a choreographer. I think it was very likely that she was not comfortable singing at this point.
Oh, I'm sure.
I don't know why they didn't use Naya Rivera, whatever. But could they not have found a dubbed voice that didn't sound like she was 37 years old?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. And like, I feel like a lot of people's problem with Glee in general is the overproduction, overproduced style of all the music. Like, people have a lot of problems with like the auto tuning and like the background vocals add to that sound a lot. And I just think that could have been so easily rectified. I don't know why they use these random backup vocals. It's so weird to me.
But honestly, I support it because I think it's hilarious.
Yeah, on it, true. And on it, like, this number is
so good.
Amazing. Diana Agron just nails it and, like, shoots it out of the park. She is doing the most. Naya Rivera, I cannot keep my eyes off of her. They're staring into the camera like it is, like, their lives depend on it. And I buy it. I love it so much.
I love this number so much. I think it is so good. As I mentioned, it sets up the Unholy Trinity so well and that they are forced to be reckoned with.
Yeah.
All right. Now on to Take a Bow by Bagrow Riri.
Bagrow Riri.
Leah Michelle crying into the mirror.
Everything. Amazing. Everything. It is everything to me. That is the most me thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
As a child, I hated this number.
Really?
I thought it was corny and I thought it was dumb and I thought it was overdramatic. And
then watching Glee, baby.
Watching it now, I was like, oh, I love this movie because it's corny and dumb and overdramatic.
Yeah.
The fact that they show Rachel singing into a hairbrush, crying in the mirror, is the writers telling us, we know that Rachel's overreacting to this.
Yes.
But that's who Rachel is. She kisses a guy who has a girlfriend for 1 second and then thinks they're absolutely in love and then cries about it in the mirror.
And honestly, that's what being a teenage girl is like. Like, I just, you know, when you're a teenager, you just don't have the tools to, like, deal with these huge things. Like, she's genuinely going through something pretty big with, like, kissing a guy and, like, that guy is already dating someone else and, like, going through, like, body image issues and, like, being bullied. Like, she is going through all of this stuff. I would cry into my mirror too, man.
Heck yeah. If you didn't cry into your mirror as a teenager, were you a teenager?
Were you a teenager? I know.
You might need to go to a doctor. I think you might still be 12 years old and you just haven't realized it.
Have you like gone through like puberty yet? I feel like that's like a really vital step of becoming an adult.
It is like you get
pubes. You should check that out.
You grow.
you get pubes, you get taller, and then you cry in the mirror.
They talk about it in middle school.
You go to maturation? Come on, you guys.
My gosh.
Yeah, literally, it's clear steps. Clear steps.
But yeah, I relate to that so much. In high school, I used to, there would be someone, and I would, like, get a crush on them. And then by the end of the day, I would imagine, like, our lives together being married and, like, how we would have this big new relationship. And it's like, you just decided you liked them this morning.
Yeah.
Being a teenager is bonkers.
Bonkers.
What I remember time.
I used to do that stuff all the time, and I dated a little bit in high school. I don't think I did not. Yeah, I think I dated probably a normal amount. Like, I wasn't like constantly dating, but I dated a little bit. But I remember there was like one guy who I never really dated, but I took to like a Sadie Hawkins dance, and he like is a white supremacist now, which like, yeah, big oof. But like, I remember like I would like draw our names together and like just think about how my like his last name would like go with my name. And we never really spoke. We never spoke. He was so like my Finn Hudson, at least in these like first two episodes, like, you know, and that's something that you do when you're a teenager and you like somebody, you know, so. And then you cry into your mirror about them when they're dating someone else. And then you realize when you're an adult and they're a white supremacist that you dodged a bullet and you don't want to be married to a white supremacist.
I cried in the mirror over nothing.
Literally.
I cried over dodging a bullet.
We did go on that date, right? And our day date was like to mini golf. And he said something to me and I said something back that every day I think about and I just cower. He said, oh my God, I can't believe I did this. He said, yeah, I don't really like feminist girls. I really like feminine girls the most. And I said, oh yeah, no, definitely. I completely agree. Well, I'm really feminine, you know. I like don't even wear pants. I don't like feminist girls at all. Can you believe that?
That's horrible.
Also, I know. I'm a staunch feminist now.
Everyone, being feminine and being a feminist are not mutually exclusive. White supremacist boyfriend. Not.
I know. He wasn't even my boyfriend. I white paid supremacist for that date.
Sadie Hawkins date. And you asked him. Embarrassing.
I know. Don't worry. My God. If he listens to this, there's no way in hell he would listen to this. But oh my God.
Now just rapid fire good moments. The pamphlet in Emma's office that says divorce while your parents stopped loving you. Hilarious.
My favorite pamphlet is the one that's like, my mom's bipolar and she won't stop yelling at me. I loved that one. Ooh. I loved in the celibacy club when Finn's boner popped the balloon. Which, when like, that wouldn't happen. I love that.
That's not how.
That's a movie magic.
That is movie magic.
It gives a whole new meaning to getting railed.
Because he has a metal rail in his pants, that's the only way that would have popped that balloon.
That's not a wiener. That's a pipe.
It is a solid lead pipe in his pants.
Honestly.
I loved when Rachel asks Will if she can use the auditorium because her neighbors are filing a lawsuit because she sings so loud in her house, which, relatable, I have been there.
I love when Mercedes calls Rachel Ava Perone.
Which is so bizarre.
I know. Like, what does that have to do with anything?
How into musical theater is Mercedes that she is dropping an Evita reference as a high schooler?
I know.
Bizarre.
Also, like, it was, like, related to nothing, but I laughed my butt off.
I genuinely like that they made Ken Tanaka a better person in this episode. He is still clearly not a great guy and a terrible match for Emma, but in the first episode, he is borderline emotionally abusive to her. But in this episode, he clearly puts some thought into the date he's asking her on. He wants to go to Tulip Palooza because he knows she likes nice smells. When she turns him down, he doesn't freak out and lick his hand like he did in the last episode. He has a frank conversation with her, which honestly she needs to hear, which is the guy that you're in love with is married with a baby. You need to give that dream up. He then does say, "You're not going to do any better than me," which just drives home really that he still is not a great guy and she should not be with him. But he is good enough that you can see why Emma decided to say yes to the date. And from a writing perspective, I do appreciate that they made him a little less awful, so that you can more understand why Emma finally said yes.
Yeah, and yeah, I completely agree. My last good, I think, is Mercedes Jones and her solo in Gold Digger.
Yes.
She needs, like, wow, what an amazing voice she has.
Give her a song already.
Already. Honestly, and off the top of my head, what, I don't even know, when is she going to get a song? I'm waiting. Ryan Murphy, answer for your crimes.
I'm pretty sure her first song is Bust Your Windows.
Really?
And I think that might be the next episode.
Oh, I would die. I would be so excited.
But I don't remember. I remember it's at a car wash. Anyways, spoiler alert. Sorry, everyone. my last one is Will has a good teacher moment in this episode. He talks to Rachel.
Yeah.
He says that he's giving her solo to Quinn, which is a bad teacher moment, but whatever. That's not what this is about. But then Rachel gets upset with him and he says to her, one, he admits his own fault and says, I should have listened to you guys. Just because disco was popular when I was a teenager doesn't mean it's popular now. I'm sorry I did that. He recognizes his own hand in what they did. And then when Rachel gets mad at him, he tells her, he says, Glee should be cool and fun. And then she gets upset that she doesn't have the solo anymore, and he tells her that he can't promise that she is going to be the star of every number, but he does promise to do his best to make sure that she is always having fun.
And like, that's the point of, like, after-school activities, yeah. Man.
And it is something that Rachel does need to hear, that this club is supposed to be fun. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to allow everyone to shine. You can't just be the center of attention all the time. Will does a lot of stuff that makes him a bad teacher, but that moment, good job, William.
Definitely. Like, and, you know, I think I've, in moments, especially, like, doing high school activities, like, taken them way too seriously.
Yeah.
Like, I think Rachel takes Glee far too seriously. Like, yeah, it's, like, her outlet, and it's her creative, like, space, and that's really important, but, like, she also needs to chill. Yeah, she needs to chill out. And we can say that because we're Rachel Berry.
Yeah, that's true. But I also have talked to people about this, about that is both why high school theater is so awful, but also the most magical theater possible.
Definitely.
Because high school theater, at least at my high school, had no funding. At my high school, we were begging people to audition. So the cast was not exceptionally talented. And yet everyone in the cast was convinced that it was the most important and incredible thing of all time, which A, made it like a little bit emotionally unhealthy, but B, when opening night came, it was such a surreal, incredible experience that frankly, professional theater is obviously such a higher quality, but my opening nights in professional theater feel nothing even close to opening
night
in high school.
Not even close.
Opening night in high school, I was like, this is my Broadway debut. And it was freaking a, like, 7-person production of Little Shop where everyone was white and the plant was just a green sheet. And I was like, this is my crowning moment. This is, like, my legacy.
Feelings are so big in high school. Can I tell you a story?
Yes.
In junior high, I was in Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Oh, my God.
Foreshadowing.
I know. Everyone. And I played the
Lena
narrator.
Lena and I were in Joseph together, but neither of us played anything close to the narrator.
No, but I did share a dressing room with her. So I was in Joseph, right? Like I said. And I played the narrator. Oh, my God. And one of my really good friends was in it with me, and she had never done theater before. She was a dancer, and she did like competition dance in high school. And she like just joined to like hang out with me and hang out with her other friends. And she kept having to miss rehearsals to go to like dance, to go to dance practice, you know, like she had already like had this obligation. And it did not make sense to me in my mind that she would have to skip rehearsal. And I was like, let me make up a name for her. Carol. You can't just
Carol.
You can't just keep missing rehearsals. Like, this is really important. Like, you keep missing rehearsals, you're going to get cut from the numbers, and you don't want that. Like, literally before, like, this was probably, oh my God, this was in eighth grade. So this was like prime me watching Glee. So like probably me emulating like Rachel Berry in some senses, but she literally turned to me and she goes, "Lena, it's just a play." And then she kept walking up the stairs, and I think I like stopped dead in my tracks and was like, "Are you joking, my
Glee?
No, it is not just a play." And it didn't feel like just a play. No. It felt like my whole world. Yeah. And like theater and like art, when you're young and that's your outlet and it's the first time you've been allowed to express yourself in this way, it's not just a play.
That people used to, because as I mentioned, we were always begging people to audition. So there were always people in the shows that were just kind of auditioned because the choir teacher talked them into it. And they would talk about, like, they would have fun and have a good time. But a lot of times during rehearsal, they'd be like, "Oh my gosh, I just wish this would end. I'd want to go home." And I would always take it as a personal attack. That I was like,
certainly.
How dare you want to not be here? This is the entire world.
Yeah.
Like, us putting on Beauty and the Beast is going to change this town. We all have to be here.
Yeah. Like, we all need to put in our 100%. Did you ever have, like, group chats with your cast in high school?
No.
Because we did, and it always caused mega... Oh, Facebook groups. That's what I meant. We always had those, and they would cause, like, really intense drama because usually me, I would, like, message the group and be like, "You guys, we really have to step it up. Mr. Uminsky was really disappointed in us today," which was, like, so inappropriate. I should not have been doing that, but it was so important to me that we did a good job. I know.
Yeah, no.
Which, I hate myself for it, but here I am.
I was too much of a pushover. I would just silently stew about how angry I was that people weren't taking it seriously. But then whenever they were like, "Isn't it dumb that the director is getting so mad at us?" I'd be like, "Ah, yeah, totally." Which was very spineless of me. Oh, well.
Yeah. Look at you. You big floater. Let's move on to some bads, right?
Lena, what are your bad? My bad list, honestly, is very short. My good list is like a page and a half. My bad list, I only have three things. What is your bad?
So my first bad, let's just get right to it. The first bad of this episode is Mr. Shoe Wrapping.
Yes.
Let's get into it. It's not good.
Let's dive right in. Yeah. It's the biggest bad.
It's the worst.
Will Schuster sings Gold Digger. All right. First off, the fact that he is like, "We're going to sing Gold Digger by Kanye West. Finn, you're going to take the lead solo." And Finn's like, "I don't know if I feel comfortable with it." And instead of Mr. Schuster being like, "No, you can do it. I'll walk you through it." He's just like, "Okay, well, let me show you how it's done."
Yeah, it's so seductive about it.
And like takes his jacket off trying to be all sexy.
And like throws it onto the ground. Like he's so nasty about it.
We talked about this in take one. But this scene was clearly like the writers wanted us to know that Matthew Morrison can be sexy.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. He can be sexy, but him trying to be sexy in front of minors who are his students is automatically not sexy. It is gross, and it makes me feel afraid of him.
Yeah, I just get the sense that, like, this scene especially is specifically for the moms. Like, it's like, you know, like, the moms need something to lust over. They can't do it to Cory Monteith, so let's lust after Mr. Shoe, you know? Like, and it's so nasty to me.
Yeah, and it's like, were you aware that the moms could lust over Will in a scene with, like, Terry or Emma?
Yeah, exactly.
And not in a scene with, like, these 16-year-old kids? Yeah. Because they're all freshmen or sophomore, too. So they're all 14 to 16 years old.
Yep. And like, not even like, honestly, everything about his performance is really terrible. But he also just, like, gets into all of their spaces and, like, literally, like,
on his students all the time.
Yeah, he's literally, like, touching Finn and, like, in Mercedes' space. And, like, I have never in my life had a teacher interact with me like that, ever.
He puts his whole body up against Finn to be like, this is how you get in the groove. And yeah, it's like completely up against him, bouncing up and down. It is. And also, I'm sorry, why is he rapping Gold Digger? It's embarrassing.
It's embarrassing.
He is so white, and he is trying so hard to be a hottie. It's the opposite of what Push It is, where Push It was supposed to be awkward, and that's why I loved it. This number is supposed to be sexy, and that's why I hate it.
Yeah.
The fact that Will Schuster is like, ooh, let me show all these 16-year-olds how sexy I am when I rap a Kanye West song, it is embarrassing to me.
It's really just awful to see. It's not fun. Ugh. Like, he's wearing, like, a really tight t-shirt and, like, really tight pants. Like, just, like, he wouldn't be teaching in that, first of all.
Someone file a report against this man. He should not be teaching at a high school.
He's about to. I'm gonna
file a report with Principal Figgins right now.
Yeah. But do you think he would do anything, though? Principal Figgins is dumb.
It also is a shame to me because I love everything about this number except for Will Schuster, who is the center of it. Mercedes sounds great on her solo. Yeah. Corey Monteith does a really good job at, like, trying to get the rhythm without getting it. There's a really funny exchange with Kurt where Will tries to get him to bounce up and down to the rhythm. And he does it, but the way he does it is he's like, I don't understand what this is. Why are you making me do it?
Yeah.
It's so funny.
He's so cute.
And then Tina and Rachel have the, like, cute little exchange where they're doing the riffs together. It would be such a fun number to flesh out these characters if there wasn't a sexual predator in the center of the entire piece.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's so cute other than that, which honestly adds to how bad I think it is. Ugh. Nasty.
A point against Will Schuster being a good teacher.
Yeah.
Ultimately, he comes out with a total of 0 from this episode.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Shame on you, William.
Shame on you, William. All right, Ian, what's your next bad?
Okay, this first bad is, like, the biggest nitpick, and I understand it. Sue makes a joke to Will where she says that he needs to do to the Glee Club what she did to her mother, which was euthanize it. It is a very funny joke. My only issue with it is, spoiler alert, Sue's mother is alive. We meet her later on. I understand why it happened, because when you start writing a TV show, it is so much at once and you're still figuring out who the characters are that you make decisions and you write lines in that you regret later because they blocked off storylines you want to explore, so you just retcon them. So it is, like, the most uppity, nitpicky bad I could have, but I did. It's like the scene in the first Mamma Mia where Meryl Streep is like, somebody up there pointing to the sky has it out for me. It's probably my mother. And then in the next movie, Cher shows up as her mother and she's alive. I forgive them for it because it's not a big deal, but I just want to be difficult and point out that they contradicted this later on. All right, what's your next bad?
My next bad is, how did Will get a vanity plate that says Glee on it so fast? And also, how did Terry sign off on that? I get the sense
and
from
also,
their dynamic.
How do they have an enormous clawfoot bathtub if they're
just
poor?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, just like, my phone fell. I get the sense that, like, Terry's probably the one who's in charge of, like, the finances. Or at least, like, she takes control of them. Like, she's the one with the spending habits. She's the one who probably purchased the clawfoot bathtub. But, like, how did Terry sign off on him changing his license plate to say Glee? How was Glee available?
Seriously, maybe you wouldn't have to work the night shift as a janitor
if
you just kept your old license plate. Maybe you could fix the muffler that's dragging out of your car.
Oh my God, you're right.
If
I didn't even think
about
that.
If you didn't get a Glee license plate.
It's not. Like, honestly, I just don't buy that would happen.
They want to think Terry's the one who's irresponsible with money.
It's Will. Will's
a second point against Will, everyone.
Literally.
I said it was 0-sum. It's -1-sum.
And honestly, how does he expect to have a kid in that car with the muffler literally, like, dragging sparks down the road near these students? Nope, 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 nope.
You think that baby's going to care that the license plate says Glee? It doesn't know how to read, but it does know how to catch on fire from the sparks from your muffler, William. You are not a fit parent. Shame. I'm calling Principal Figgins and I'm calling Child Protective Services on William Schuster.
For his unborn child that's about to catch on fire.
This man tries to sing sexy in front of his underage students.
Yeah.
And he spends his money that he should be saving for his baby on vanity plates. Oh,
vanity plates.
Irresponsible.
Also, how did he get it so fast? I don't know, like, what is the time? How much time has passed between the first and second episode? I assume it's not long. I assume it's not more than a week. I don't buy it.
I'm Googling this right now.
I don't buy it.
Vanity plates take 8 to 12 weeks to make.
Do you think he made it himself?
He went to prison in those 8 to 12 weeks and he made his own vanity plate. He went to prison because he was hitting on his students.
Oh, my
and
God.
And he made a vanity plate, and then he got out of prison, and Principal Figgins was like, well, it's a recession, and he hired him back. He put the plate on his car. That's why the Glee Club has not progressed at all in these 8 to 12 weeks, was because Will was in prison the whole time.
Yeah.
He just got released, so that's why it seems like the storyline has picked up right where it left off in the pilot. It's because Will has not seen anyone in 2 to 3 months.
Yeah. He went to jail for 2 to 3 months. Are there sentences that last that short? I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know anything about jail, personally.
If you watch an underage kid in the shower, but then you have a really good reason why you did it,
yeah,
it's because you were unlocking his potential.
Yeah, I was unlocking his potential.
They'll only give you 3 months.
Yeah, they're like, okay, fine. I mean, it's creepy, but like, go to jail for 3 months, make yourself a vanity plate,
they're
come
like,
back.
Sir, could you explain to us why you stared at this 16-year-old in the shower? And he's like, no, it's cool. I was recognizing that he could sing well.
And they were like,
and then they're like, okay, but could you explain why you planted weed on him? And he says, oh no, I wanted him recognize that he could sing well.
Oh,
and they
God.
Were like, well, if it's because he's talented, you can get off in 3 months. The Ohio legal system is a trash fire.
Oh, you mean Finn Hudson? The star quarterback? The one with the football scholarship?
Yeah, I'd love to see that kid branch out. Yeah, I'll get you back out of prison. Don't worry. Anyways.
You know what? Take a vanity plate on your way out.
They say all kinds of emotions. You can take a vanity plate that says sadness, anger, glee. And he's like, I don't need anything further than that. I'll take it and I'll go. I don't think this bit
right
has
there.
Lasted far enough. Should we
keep
going?
Yeah, honestly, no. Do you have any more bads? Listen,
I have one more bad.
I don't.
Oh, I do. My final bad is I recognize that Rachel is better for Finn than Quinn because Quinn is like very emotionally distant and very demanding and kind of mean. I recognize that Emma is better for Will than Terry because Terry's overbearing and she's irresponsible. But the writers want us to clearly root for them, to root for like Will and Emma to get together and root for Finn and Rachel to get together and root for them to cheat on their significant others. And I'm not about it.
Yeah.
I would much rather the plot be Will realizing his relationship with Terry is toxic, separating, and then him having a flirtation with Emma, and same thing with Finn and Quinn, than for me to feel like the writers want me to be like, yeah, Finn, kiss Rachel even though you have a girlfriend. Makes me uncomfortable. Let's break up the couple first before they start
definitely
with the other girl.
What a weird
That's my final
trope.
Bad.
I have one final bad.
Okay.
Tina C.
Oh,
doesn't
oh,
have
yeah,
a
yeah.
single line in this episode.
She does. I said last time that she didn't.
What did she say?
She has one line. It's so short. I'm going to find it. When they sing Freak Out, Will tells them you're going to perform this in an assembly. And Tina says, in front of the whole school. That's all she says.
Oh, that's not enough.
Six words.
That's
no,
not
it's
enough.
Not enough at all.
And honestly, that's like probably my final bad with this episode is that I think we're spending a lot of time that I think is necessary on establishing Finn and Rachel, especially as members of the Glee Club and like, you know, being romantic interests in each other that we are taking away from the rest of the students. And I want to know these characters.
It is necessary because we do need to have a plot first.
Sure.
But like, they did a good job in this episode of giving Kurt more personality, even though he's not central to the plot.
Yeah.
Why could they not have done that with Tina?
I know.
She doesn't do anything.
She doesn't do anything. There's not even like a cut scene with her, like, you know, commenting on Mercedes' Technicolor zebra-ness, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
I think Tina should have a say in what Mercedes wears, too.
Certainly. Anyway, so I don't love that. I don't love that, you know, a lot of the other students are really just overlooked in these first couple episodes. I'm ready to meet them, you know?
Yeah, I'm ready to flesh out the cast more. All right. Finally, we have the ugly. As I mentioned at the beginning, ugly are things that have aged poorly. It's not just like, I don't like that the writers didn't give Tina enough lines. It's like, ooh, this line made me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
We just think that visiting Glee from an adult perspective in 2020, we should take a moment to call out things that would not fly in today's world.
Definitely.
So we're just gonna have a little moment to call them out.
Definitely. First and foremost, so we have like four singles in this episode that were released, like the four official songs, other than La Freak. All four of them are written by Black people, and all four of them are sung by our white characters. And like, what the heck?
It's just, yeah, what the heck? Just not a great, not
yeah,
a great
it's not a good look, yo. Like, especially when we have a Black character who has one solo in the whole show. She does an amazing job. What the heck? That ratio is off. As a person from 2020, that doesn't look good.
I have, well, one, there's just a lot of jokes that aren't great in this episode. Like Rachel calls the football team chromosomally challenged.
Yeah.
There's jokes about Artie being in a wheelchair. And they're like, to be fair, some of them are played by Sue is a terrible person. You're not supposed to be laughing at the joke. You're supposed to be horrified by how awful Sue is. But some of them aren't that. Some of them are just straight up like they put this ableist joke in, or they put jokes that just haven't landed great.
Yeah.
Haven't aged wonderfully after 11 years.
Yeah. And like, especially when we have characters like Rachel saying stuff like that, like calling...
Yeah, who is calling, the hero of the show.
She's our hero. And I know that she's a super flawed character, and that doesn't go away. And like, you know, there's so much to say about Rachel. But like, when she says stuff like that, come on, yo. That ain't cool.
My final ugly that I have is, I wrote, the eating disorder of it all.
The eating disorder of it all.
Treat bulimia so lightly in this episode to the point that I'm like, just don't have her be throwing up. Have Emma hear Rachel crying in the bathroom. Because I understand they need a reason for Emma to talk to Rachel alone in her office. I wish that reason wasn't that Rachel was experimenting with an eating disorder, specifically because they then brush it off so easily.
Yeah. And I don't Rachel's, think it's...
Yeah.
I don't Go. Think it's ever brought up again. Like, even no. Emma, like, as a school guidance counselor, she does say something along the lines of, like, hey, let's, like, unpack these feelings that make you want to experiment with bulimia. But, like, it very quickly turns into this is a plot point for Rachel to get her courage to talk to Finn. And yeah. I don't love that, like, to me... Eating disorders are not a plot point. Like, in especially for teenagers, that's a very, well, very, very real thing that kids go through.
Specifically not a minor plot point that gets addressed once and then swept under the rug.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, like, I'm nervous that kids see that. And then
they're like, oh, yeah, 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 I should throw up.
Yeah, they draw bad conclusions from it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's treated, A, kind of like a joke,
yeah.
And B, it's never addressed, like, the gravity of what an eating disorder does to your life.
Definitely.
And also, Rachel says, I tried bulimia and I didn't like it. As if it's like, yeah, it's okay to try it, maybe it's not for you.
Yeah, and, like, that's certainly not how, like, disordered eating works. I totally agree. That's definitely one of my uglies as well.
Yeah. All right, do you have any more uglies?
I don't think I do.
Besides me?
No.
Well, that's a season wrap on episode 2 Showmance. Overall, yeah. Very good episode.
Yeah, great episode.
We did talk about our goods and bads, but just what was your best moment, worst moment?
Easily my best moment from this episode, and the moment that makes me feel the most seen is Rachel crying in the mirror with the hairbrush. And singing at the top of her lungs. I just feel so seen. Like, as a teenager, I felt so seen by that moment. And, like, watching it as an adult, I'm like, yeah, that's how I felt, too. I have been there. And I love that. And I love that it's it's juxtaposed with her like singing on a stage and juxtaposed with her singing in the hallway with Finn and Quinn. Like, I just think that whole scene is very beautiful. She does a really great job singing it. And I get those big emotions, you know? So I love that scene.
All right, my best moment is a tie. I love Push It. It is, I laughed so hard. Push It. Everything about that number is incredible. It is furthers the character so well. It is so hysterical. A+. Also, I love Say a Little Prayer. Yeah. I actually really like Diana Agron's voice.
Yeah.
I mean, that song wasn't the best choice for her voice, but whatever. But I do really like her voice. I love that it's the Unholy Trinity together, and I'm a sucker for a Queen Bee villain.
Yeah, me too.
You know how much I love Mean Girls.
I know you do.
I love a good Queen Bee villain. That song is prime Queen Bee Quinn. I really like it.
Yep.
All right, what's your worst moment?
My worst moment is probably all the locker room talk in the celibacy scene. Like, yuck. I don't love almost anything about that. Mm. I don't love how the girls are like, you know, learning that being manipulative is cool. I don't love how the guys are like objectifying women so hard. And I don't love Jacob in that scene. It is really difficult to watch. I have really mixed feelings about that scene because, yeah, it's bringing light to like real things that happen when you're young and when you're a teenager and when you're like full of hormones, but like I don't think it does a good enough job at condemning it, you know, like making it look bad. I think it just kind of like gives it to you. Yeah. They're like, here's this locker room talk, do with that what you will. They don't do a good enough job being like, oh yeah, this is like terribly inappropriate and the way that these kids are acting is not something that's acceptable.
Yeah, because as someone who was a teenage boy, it is accurate
to the way they act.
But as you mentioned, and like on the Quinn side of things, all the cheerleaders are made to be like super manipulative and that they prey on the teenage boy's horniness and all of that stuff. But she is meant to look bad in that scene. The guys aren't really meant to look that bad.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so it's like, I understand why they're doing it because it is accurate. But as you said, it should look worse. Like, it should make them look worse.
Yeah. And I also hate to see, like, especially women in that light, because I think from a young age, women are taught that, like, the only thing you have against men and you have to hold over their heads is sex. And that's the only thing you're good for. You're, like, they don't want to talk to you. They don't want to look. They just want to, like, look at you and, like, you know, be sexual with you. And these women are made to look bad for it. Like, they look really bad. And I think that's just a product of, like, how we were raised. And I don't like it at all. What was your final worst part?
Frankly, you already brought it up. I think my worst part might be that Tina only had one line. I just think it's such a waste. Later on, when there's more members, I understand that it's harder to give every character a shining moment, but there's only 6 people in this club. Like, could you not have given Jenna Ushkowitz a little more to work with? So that bummed me out. That's my worst moment.
Yeah. Other than that, strong episode.
Very good episode.
Yeah.
Good job, writers.
Yeah.
All right.
Big pat on the back.
That was Showmance. If you liked what you heard, please rate this podcast, leave a review. That will make it more visible to other people. If you didn't like what you heard, you still can, but like maybe don't.
Maybe don't. Or like lie. Just say it was really good. If you made it this far, I love you so much. Let's hug sometime when this pandemic is over.
Yeah, let's stand 6 feet apart and wave to each other.
Yeah.
Sometime. All right, well, thank you for listening, everyone.
Thank you. Love you guys.
Go spread some glee. How's that for a sign off?
Oh my god, should that be our sign off?
I like it. Are we coining it? We'll find out in future episodes if we stick to that.
We'll see if it sticks. See you guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Recovering Gleek. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at recoveringgleek_podcast. If you liked our podcast, be sure to leave a review. And tell your friends, please.